poet and philosopher Rumi said, "You are born with potential. You are born with goodness and trust. You are born with ideals and dreams. You are born with greatness. You are born with wings. You are not meant for crawling, so don't. You have wings. Learn to use them and fly." This is the Producers Lounge Podcast, the best podcast online for tips and tricks on producing great film, television, and web content. Welcome back for Season 2, Episode 15, hosted and produced by GreaterAndGrander.com. On this week's episode, we're chatting with Sabrina Ortel, who has produced commercials including campaigns for Lexus and BMW. We discuss getting an agent and manager, below-the-line struggles, developing projects when you have limited resources, and set life. Her life's journey has taken her from Ontario in the Inland Empire to the District Attorney's Office to producing commercials in Santa Barbara to now running her own feature development and production company. Here now is my conversation with Sabrina Ortel as we join her at the glamorous beach of Santa Barbara, California. So how is the beach at Santa Barbara today?
So Santa Barbara is always fantastic. There is never a day here that is bad. Even when it's cloudy, cold, overcast, I'm still here. It's my happy place. Yeah, I practice transcendental meditation. I think every filmmaker should have some sort of meditation in their toolkit because it creatively just opens you up like crazy. And that's something I like to promote often.
But yeah, meditation is like one of the things I know I should do more of, but I don't for some reason. But yeah.
It's a thing. You'll get there. I practice twice a day in this technique.
Ah, okay, cool. Cool.
Yeah. I'm reading a book called The Deal, actually.
Ah.
And it's an older book. It's by Peter Lefcourt. It's just more a movie business deal. I read for a living as well in terms of I read books and screenplays. So
right.
There's a downtime and that's sort of my downtime reading.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. How long, can I ask, how long have you been up there?
I've been in Santa Barbara since the 90s and back and forth to LA since 2008, back and forth for work. And during COVID, I was lucky enough to spend time here, which was amazing. Had a beautiful beach house. So that was really special to have nature and, you know, really take advantage of the sunshine and the time that everyone had. So it was really great. It was creatively great for me as well.
I'll bet. Can I ask what you were up to during the pandemic? Like, what are you most proud of that you did? Or,
well, I actually had a director that stayed with me as well. And we thought, why not try to create a project together? It wasn't like I didn't have projects of my own, right? But because of the pandemic, everybody just freaked out, didn't know what to do, you know, the first few months, nobody knew. And we had just come back from a shoot in Las Vegas. So we also were still like, what's going on? So he had this idea in his head for the last 10 years, a passion project. And he says, you know, I just need someone to write it. I'm not a writer. I certainly know how to navigate around final draft. You know, as a producer, you need to know. You have to know. I've never written. Like, I never wanted to write. I never wanted to be one of those producers who, oh, I could do everything. I can do this. Yes, I can do everything. But can I do it great? No. So I leave that to the professionals that can do it. And that's the whole point of collaboration, right? Anyway, so we wrote a script. I actually learned how to write a screenplay, a full feature in Final Draft in less than a month because I had time, right? And I had really great mentors also that were really easily available who I would have never otherwise had opportunity to just call on the phone and say, hey, what does this mean? Or how do you write this? I mean, I was so blessed. I can't drop the name, but it was really great. You've seen this rom-com, very prolific back in the day, and it's just great. So that's what I did during that. And also, I got my business together. You know, I had a lot of admin that I needed to do on the end of the business of film, right? Took care of that and was able to get a lot of meetings, believe it or not, with a lot of talent managers and agents. It was awesome. It was so great.
That is fantastic. I'm curious because I'm actually trying to get my reels together and trying to embark on the whole agent and manager process myself right now. What did you
Right.
learn in that process?
I think what I learned really was what not to do and how to actually have more confidence in what you are doing. Because as soon as you hear the first no, sorry, pass, whatever, or you get on the rolling call list, and to even know what a rolling call list is a big deal, then you understand, oh, I'm not that big of a deal, or my project is not that big of a deal. Because maybe you don't have named attachment, you don't have the financial backing behind it, but you've got a great idea and a great pitch deck. So that is really what I learned, how to play that game of how to talk with managers and agents, what they actually are looking for, and legally what agents have to look for their clients. It was my film school, so to speak, in that regard. I learned a lot. I really learned that agents are just people, managers are just people. The managers are a little quirkier than agents, but they're just people. And if you approach it that way and you're authentic and you're not trying to hustle, because we can smell hustle a mile away, especially when it's not authentic, scammy type other people. Just come on, stop. We don't need that. So it was
Right.
really, really great to get the confidence builder in myself and really know, oh, okay, that's how I do it. Oh, all right, this is what you say. And those are the key words. And, drop this name when you need to and don't drop those names. It was really an education, actually, something I don't think you learn in film school, more or less being on set.
Can you give some specific examples or specific stories of what to do and what not to do?
I spoke with someone at a prominent agency. Great, super great guy. He was looking for something specific, but was gracious enough to still entertain what I was pitching. And the conversation was so not what I had in my head when I called. And I'm like, oh gosh, this is nothing that what I thought it was going to be like. He was a regular person doing his job. You could tell he was very good at his job and was very busy. So it made that conversation more professional. And then that actually helped me understand my professional responsibility as a producer. At that time, I was actually coming to him as a writer, first-time writer. And that was just hilarious because I said, I don't write, but I have this. And since then, I wrote another short. And, he was really cool to say, I really am focusing on a particular type of writer from this particular type of region. And you're not that, but you're close to it. And if I need to maybe fill that gap, I'll definitely ring back. But keep in touch, send me things when you can. And I'm like, okay, cool. And that's how that started. It was
Awesome.
great. Yeah, it was really great. It was easier than I thought.
Nice. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ontario, California, and that's a small little town in the Inland Empire. A family there, and then had a lot of stuff going on with family and took off, went to school, met some guy, got married, someone I didn't know for two weeks. Then I hightailed it up to Northern California. Oh, that's such a story.
I'd
Lived
love
in,
to hear it if you feel comfortable sharing it.
oh, hell no, not on this podcast. That isn't that the After Dark Producers Have Stories podcast? Anyway, needless to say, we survived that. Lived up north in Northern California for quite some time, and then came back down to Santa Barbara with a boyfriend at the time who was moving his job. He worked for FedEx. He got kind of bigger in the FedEx world. So this was an area for him. And, I thought close to LA, it's great. Why not? At the time, I was working with a district attorney's office in a sexual abuse unit. And it was nothing to do with film at all. But little did I know that would set the stage for working on set. Little did I know. So came to Santa Barbara. Our first day here, we came at night. The first morning here, there was a central parade on State Street. And it was summer, it was June, it was beautiful. It's gorgeous, sunny. I'm like, wow, how lucky am I? I walked to the center street and I saw nothing but naked people with paint all over. And I'm like, what the hell? Where did I land? But it was a summer solstice parade. So that's what they do every year. And it was glorious. I go every year. And no, I'm not a naked covered paint person. No. So that brought me to Santa Barbara. Just networked a lot. Went into, I didn't need to work. I needed to take time off because, as you can imagine, it was really heady. The kind of things that in my work, what I was doing.
This was still with the district attorney's office?
Yeah. So I quit that job. And when I came to Santa Barbara, I thought, okay, what am I going to do? I don't need to work right now. Financially, I was okay. And I thought creatively, I love commercials. How are you getting to commercials? I mean, I didn't know anybody in the film business. My family didn't know anybody. Like, we knew nobody. I didn't know friends that were in the film business. So I just did a little research, and a friend of mine here in Santa Barbara said, hey, you know, there's a receptionist position at this cable company. They do video productions. And I was kind of bored at that point. I'm like, okay, you know, something. So sure, why not? And it was great. I actually was not only the receptionist, but office manager, office coordinator. Gosh, I did everything just about. And learned a little bit there. The people there were great, fantastic place to start. But it wasn't quite movie production or commercial production. So I started looking at backstage when it was an actual magazine paper. And I was going for every PA job possible. I didn't care, whatever. I just wanted to learn. And I didn't know where to start. So my very first job.
And just to confirm, this was still, you were still working the kind of receptionist office manager role.
I was doing this on the weekends. Gig. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was super like, let's do it, whatever I need to do. And sometimes I would take the day off. I had really cool bosses and they knew what I wanted to do. And I mean, you couldn't really stop me when I was just ready to go. You just can't stop a person that has will. Mm-hmm. So I then set out to do my job. My first job was an art director for Timex Indiglo commercial. And it was a spec commercial that actually got picked up. I had no idea what that was. I had to production design a soundstage, but put a forest with a camping scene on it.
Jesus.
I know, right? No clue what to do. Mm-hmm. I did a little bit of research, and this was before cell phones. Thank you very much. Did a little research, and Green Set Nursery was my best friend. They hooked me up. They showed me everything. I nailed it. Got the commercial got picked up. So it was great, you know? And I realized I don't want to be an art director. No, I love it. It was great. I did some more art direction stuff, you know, but it wasn't then. So I started in commercials. And the commercial world back then was really financially booming. There was a lot of money ad agencies were throwing around at production because ad agencies and clients wanted to come and go to really different places, exotic places or to the beach or wherever, you know? So because I was still in Santa Barbara, I started bringing a lot of production up here, car commercials specifically, like Mercedes, Honda, Range Rover, Lexus, Jaguar, Chevy. We did a lot out in Santa Ynez because there's nothing but winery. It's country. It's gorgeous, you know? Mm-hmm. And I got into that really deep. I started to work my way up and I was producing after like maybe 2 years. I just started producing out of necessity because I really was the only gig in town. I mean, there was plenty of people here, but they were mostly like, there's a friend of mine named Tim Angulo. He was special effects DP and he did every big tentpole franchise ever. So this was just his home. He didn't need to work here. Go ahead.
No, I was just curious because you say like you started bringing productions up there, you know, and in a 2 year time span, you went from what sounds like art department to producing and bringing productions to Santa Barbara. So I'm curious, what were some of the specific moves you made in order to make that happen? Like, did you have direct contacts at the agencies or did you like working or were you working as a subsidiary of another production company or what have you?
You're very smart to ask that because most people don't understand in between the lines. So my hustle was deep. Every time I was on a commercial shoot or production shoot, I knew the producers. I knew where to go. I knew who to network with. I knew who to ask. I wasn't just working. I was networking every job. And every job afterwards, I'd say, thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm looking for this. I live here. Happy to be your coordinator wherever, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. That got me the next gig closer. That got me a PC job, production coordinator job. That would get me a scouting job. That would get me something. And the agencies, because their clients were there with the ad agencies, I got to know clients as well. So the real trick is not just keeping your head down, but also keeping your eyes open and your ears open and not being afraid to, I don't want to say go above hierarchy, but there is something to say when you're cool and kind to the people around you, people notice when you're a hard worker. You know, it's okay to say at lunchtime to your client and you're the grip, hey, really like your company. Your brand is cool. I love it, whatever. I'm looking to, you know, DP one day. It'd be really great to see you again. You just got to ask for it because you're there. Mm-hmm. So I did that. I did that all the time. And I was able to use those contacts to get me closer to here. It was by myself. I had no other production company. I just knew what I wanted to do. And who else was going to look out for me but me? So that's what I did. And we had a lot of commercials out here. And then 2004 is when I opened Blue Chair Productions. Mm-hmm. And it was crazy. It was a good time, but it was crazy. There was so much work. It was crazy. And just, it was me, you know, and a lot of independent contractor people left and right, you know.
So let me ask, as a producer, you know, you open up Blue Chair Productions in 2004. I assume by that point you had already known kind of the Santa Barbara crew scene and the people who were like the best in their field. And so you were able to call on those.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it was a really interesting time because we kind of were all at the same point. People were working in LA, but yet people wanted to sleep in their beds here in Santa Barbara. It's just like in LA, you want to sleep in your own bed. So I made it a pact to get more work here. Santa Barbara has always been very expensive because it's a tourist town. The permitting process isn't that easy. It's not that cheap either. It's not like, hey, we welcome shooting here. Not really. But they do recognize the value of bringing some tourists here, you know, bringing some dollar to spend in the hotels and things like that. So it made it easier for me to bring other people from LA when a lot of the other crew here just, they couldn't work, or I outgrew a lot of people professionally. And it was really hard. It was hard to, you know, show your friends, you know, I'm sorry, but we now have a different level. I grew and I needed to bring crew behind me that actually reflected that as well, because my clients needed that. And that's when I started bringing some LA folks up here. And I started to also not like that I was doing that because my friends weren't working as much. And I would try to give them gigs in LA, but I'm like, listen, I can't bring you all on here. You just don't have the gear anymore. We just don't have it. And it's really sad because there's a lot of great people in Santa Barbara. And I wish that I could be like, I don't know, the czar of Santa Barbara film community to bring it, to ultimately coordinate everybody together and get people work. But, you know, one day maybe. But that was something that it still happens to this day. When I'm here, people are no longer in the business. The rent's high here. The real estate's super expensive. So a lot of people have moved on. Different jobs, but I'm still here.
Or what did you like most about producing commercials?
I liked the fact that it was fast. It was really simplistic in knowing that you had 48 hours to shoot. You had a week of prep. You had maybe up to a week to wrap out, done, on to the next. And it was a challenge, actually, which led me to also in 2014, I think it was, I was so curious with this 48-hour film challenge around that I actually signed up to do one of the city producing jobs because I wanted to see what that was about. And quite honestly, because I'm actually thinking of doing that myself just for fun, because we creatives need that outlet too, you know? We need to compete. Mm-hmm. So why not do it for professionals in a really fun, casual competition where it actually is for fun, but like serious prize money or something like distribution, like just straight to the top, like not even play around. So that's something that I'm still working on. It's just a passion. It's not anything that I need to do, but I feel like it's fun enough. We should do it.
That sounds great, actually.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. And then also I'm curious, like, because you're kind of straddling both worlds with, you know, commercial production and then also the creative side, what do you do to maintain the relationships? Because those are, at least in my experience, two very different kind of subcultures and communities within the entertainment industry, and they have very different requirements. You know,
you're 100% right. Commercial world producers, we're a different animal. We know how to get things done. The solutions-based producer is something kind of foreign to creative producers in the feature film world. No offense to anyone, because mm-hmm. I'm now a development feature film producer.
Right.
So a lot of times I've met development. I know one really great creative development producer who just had a show on Netflix with a very talented actress who just did her directorial debut. But this woman is simply development. She's never set foot on production. Like, she's never had to carry and produce a shoot, mm-hmm. which is a completely different animal. Having onset experience is different than having the creative development financial background. So for me, it really is a better combination when I have investors and people trying to invest and collaborate with me. I'm able to pull out that secret weapon and say, well, I know how to not waste money. I've been there, done that. I've done from the commercial world. So we know how to do this. Mm-hmm. And it makes a really interesting dynamic because all of a sudden I'm tried and true 15 years commercial producer. 2013 is when I hate the word pivoted, but transition into mm-hmm. feature film producing. So this is my second act, so to speak. And I think that it makes people a little bit more aware that you can handle things, that the confidence is there, that it's a very special, unique skill set to have. So it makes me unique in that respect. And quite frankly, I would hire a commercial producer any day,
mm-hmm.
truly. It just is something that I know works.
Got it. And then so let's then talk about that transition, not pivot, but transition. So when you decide to make that transition, what are some of the steps that you decide you want to take? Do you start with scripts? Do you do open call, like competitions or what have you? Or do you just work only with the people you already know to see if you have any talent in that pool for that realm?
All good questions. It's really interesting. No one really talks about the business of development because mm-hmm. we're too busy to sit and talk because we're developing. Mm-hmm. And development equals relationship building most of the time. Mm-hmm. And because we're developing a writer or a script that we may have found, it just depends on the kind of direction, your overall direction. Some people are attached already to studios. I'm not. I'm still independent on purpose. But that doesn't mean that I'm not open to it. It doesn't mean that I haven't been courted by studios. It means that I personally want to take still control as an independent producer until the last minute, until I have to. So I find a lot of my projects in the beginning, I didn't know what, where, who. I didn't even get what the whole writer, development, producer relationship meant. So I just knew that I knew where there was a lot of scripts. And I think it was some of the social boards at the time, like, oh gosh, remember Inktip? I think Still was doing something.
Oh, Inktip. I remember, right? Inktip. Yeah.
Right. Inktip. I was networking still. So I'd always meet people. Hey, I'm a writer. Hey, okay, cool. I didn't know what send me your script really meant, which I no longer say. So now I've jumped from actively trying to find to actually knowing what I'm capable of producing. connecting, mm-hmm. what my contacts and networks, what actually fits. You know, I have a lot of contacts all over the place. If you only had contacts for streamers, then you know dang well that maybe you don't want to go after, you know, a show that's suited for a theatrical release that needs bigger money behind it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It just depends. I like to create the relationships with my writers, with people that I just found some guy on Twitter, actually. And he was a graphic novel content creator. Mm-hmm. And I've never been involved in comics or that graphic novel world. It's not to say that I wasn't looking for it, but when I saw it, something about him, the title was great. His artwork was amazing. He was really easy to get along with. And we've now, we're in negotiations to option his whole franchise. And mm-hmm. it's amazing, you know? So it's taking the time to actually research and then taking the time to know the writers, because I honestly don't, I'm not one of those sharky producers that will just go and say, yeah, here's 30 grand. See you. Bye. I'm not that person. I like to collaborate. You know, you figure mm-hmm. if somebody spent their time and intellect and talent in writing a screenplay, and now that I've written one, I get what that means. So I like to honor people that way and myself in relationships and create a fun pathway to making a feature film. So development is really important for relationships. And I don't, you know, it pains me when I get on LinkedIn, like 50 emails about, here's my script, here's my script. those query emails are ridiculous, but I get it. What else do you do if you don't know anybody? You don't yeah. know the game, but I feel like someone needs to say, listen, I love your hustle. It's really great, but I legally do not want to take your script because I don't know you, A. Mm-hmm. I may have something like this in my office already, mm-hmm. and I'm probably midway producing. So sorry, mm-hmm. you know, I've actually said that to a couple of people. I took pity on them and wrote like a long paragraph reply back saying, gosh, I'm so sorry, but I'm going to help you out. And I hope it did help. The guy said it did, but you know, you never know.
Got it. Yeah, no, a couple of things I just want to touch on for people who are listening. Like, number one, we mentioned Inktip and, you know, back in the day, there used to be these online groups that were tracking boards for different.
But now are different, completely better places.
Now are way better, way better. But yeah,
way better. Yeah. No offense to Inktip.
Yeah, but basically these places of just tracking scripts, what's hot in the town, the latest hot spec script, et cetera.
It really is smart for a producer to mm-hmm. actually be involved in all the groups. Like Coverfly is really great. But I have met somebody cool out of that. So, you know, I also subscribe to the Writers Guild updates and memos. I find that Blacklist is also amazing to actually mm-hmm. see what the industry is looking at. That way you kind of know, oh, okay, the industry is looking at this right now. So if I go into, let's say, Lionsgate with this script, they're going to be like, yeah, we already have that already. Mm-hmm. So pass on you. It makes your job as a producer a little bit easier when you do that kind of research and do a deep dive into those coverage boards. It really helps.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then regarding what you said about development, I think you're absolutely right about relationships and developing that, no pun intended, but, basically,
it's
yeah.
True. Like,
yeah. And I remember because it really is winding up being a very, very close knit, almost like intimate process. I remember I worked with one writer directly out of USC, and he and I, he decided, yeah, Tucci, I want to develop a script with you. I didn't have any resources at that time other than, you know, mm-hmm. traditional producer. Like I got Moxie and Spunk, you know, but
that's it.
Yeah,
that's it.
But he was developing the script based on a couple of premises that I had. And in our writing process, I would actually sometimes improvise scenes with him, you know, as the characters. And he
would. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And And so that was a really fun experience trying to do that with him. And it really was just a close-knit relationship we had for a couple of years. And we wound up pitching to a bunch of places, including like the Summers Company and other places.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah.
But you probably were able to get farther along because of that relationship. You know, you guys mm-hmm. were tight enough to go in and, you know, kind of give a look to each other like, uh-oh, we're going in a different direction. Follow me, you know. And mm-hmm. when you don't have that relationship and you're in a room pitching, it's so weird. It's the weirdest, coolest experience. And if you're not ready for it, you could fuck it up royally. Or
yeah,
you could mm-hmm. be super successful and be asked back. You know, one of the biggest compliments I've ever gotten was, so what else do you have? Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And to this day, we're still inching along. And, you know, I think for me, it took me a little bit longer to crack because I was busy in the commercial world. Mm-hmm. I know that if I would have just 100% said, boom, here, I'm done in feature film, I'd have like 10 features already done, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm all good now. Just, you know, I'm enjoying the ride, enjoying the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In the recent years with COVID and the transition you've made into feature films, what do you think is the most important piece of knowledge that you've learned in that recently?
You know, you have to be authentic. You mm-hmm. have to be who you are. You cannot be this quote, big shot producer who, when you have no money and mm-hmm. you feel like you need to pretend you have money. No, so not a good look. Mm-hmm. You will be found out. No one will ever call you. And people talk. We talk. We producers, we talk. And it's a very, like, no one says that. No one wants to tell other people that producers talk. I have like five producers on speed dial. And all we do is say, do you know so-and-so? He's a writer. Da, 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 da. Oh, yeah. He's a dick. He sounds like he's this, whatever. That's how we talk.
Right. Right.
You know, word gets around. Be authentic. Be truthful. And believe in yourself, believe in your project, but leave your ego at home. Seriously.
And also, God help you if you try to snowball somebody who's at like the upper echelons. Like, and for those who aren't aware, snowballing is a term in the industry where you're not necessarily lying, but you're lying by omission. Like, and tell me if you disagree with this definition, but like if you say, oh yeah, I worked on my last gig, I worked on a Quentin Tarantino movie. But you know, if you were like working one day as a PA or craft services, it's a completely different interpretation.
Completely.
Yeah.
Completely. And a lot of us older producers, we've been around, we're like, yeah, okay, kid, we've done that too. We know what that's like. And 9 times out of 10, I probably know somebody from that. The mm-hmm. industry gets smaller and smaller the longer you last. And yeah. I have no problem calling. I won't ever tell the person I found out you lied. I will just never work with you again. It's that simple. There's a ton of people behind everybody. I know there's people behind me wanting my job. Mm-hmm. So that keeps me on my toes and it makes for a better relationship for everybody all the way around.
Right. Right. Absolutely. So let me ask you, within the few minutes we have left, I want to just ask, if you could go back in time to the version of yourself, you know, growing up in Ontario and then moving to San Francisco and all that, if you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh my gosh. That's a loaded question. But honestly, I would actually have to say it was in Northern California. It wasn't San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
But I would say have more confidence mm-hmm. and own it. Own your own confidence. Believe in yourself is what I'm trying to say, for sure.
Very cool. Very cool.
It's a lot more, but that's, we can end with that.
Okay. And that is season 2, episode 15 of the Producers Lounge podcast. Thank you to my guest, Sabrina Ortel, for joining us. You can find out more about her by checking out the show notes and visiting our website at greaterandgrander.com. Our intro and outro music today was Agua de Coco by Jose Corte Riel. Our episode still image is by Rostov Tsevayu on depositphotos.com. If you have any questions or suggestions, we'd love to hear from you. Let us know in the episode comments. You can stay up to date by following us on social media at the handle Greater Grander, all one word. Make sure to subscribe wherever fine podcasts are found, and also, if you like what we do, share this podcast with a friend who you think will enjoy it. Join us next week for more cocktails and questions, and until then, keep producing dreams.